A report by the Institute of Medicine says marketers are spending an estimated $11 million a year to persuade children to eat and drink products with high levels of sugar, salt, and fat. The report says those marketing efforts are having an adverse impact on the health of American children. Dennis Martin reporting, USA Radio Network News.
A pop quiz for parents with third grade teacher, Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. One, name one Hollywood director. Two, name one actor from a TV sitcom. Number three, name one comedian. Four, name one game show host. Five, name one professional athlete. Number six, name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school and know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Today is Tuesday, and every Tuesday on the Scoop, we like to invite someone with views quite different from my own. I've had a number of people on this show, mostly those who support the Bush administration, since I haven't been a big fan of it, but all kinds of people we've had on Debate Tuesdays, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, people with no particular political view, but who disagree with me on some issue or point. What we haven't had before today is a listener devoted an entire hour on the Debate Tuesday. We certainly have had listeners call in. And in fact, I want to encourage you to do just that, 877-528-TALK, whether you agree or disagree with my guest or myself. But Ed Ronka, formerly of Morris Plains, New Jersey, currently of Buffalo, New York, has been listening to the Inside Scoop for quite a long time. I went back and I looked and I saw that we have emails from him, posts on the blog that date back to March 2004. That's when the blog first began, by the way, folks. And I recall calls dating back to, 2003, the year the Inside Scoop began. So despite the protest of my producer who said, Mark, now every caller is going to want their own Debate Tuesday, I have overruled them because I've always believed that, unlike many talk radio hosts, mostly on the right, but some on the left as well, I value the opinions of those that disagree with me. Ed from New Jersey, now from Buffalo, New York, has called in and disagreed with me for more than 2 years now. And when he emailed me asking to have an hour or a radio hour, which we all know is about 40 minutes long, to debate the issue of Iraq, I couldn't say no. So, Ed Ronka, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Let me just ask you before we get into Iraq, why it is that with all the right-wing talk shows out there that support the president, why you currently continue to listen to the Inside Scoop?
I agree with your philosophy that you value the people you disagree with. I read the New York Times every day. I read the Wall Street Journal, of course, too. But I also make a point to talk to people I don't agree with, just to see if I, you know, test my own theories out and test my own convictions. I mean, there's nothing that. I'm not religiously attached to any issue. I simply come to my conclusion based on the facts as I observe them. And there's no way to do that rationally without challenging your thoughts and trying to see what other people think that's different than yours.
Well, I respect that, and I certainly agree with you on that, and that's why I'm very glad to have you here. So let's start the debate. I will give you the first go at it. Now, you said when you came on this show, you said in your email, you want to discuss three things: why it was right to go to war in the first place, why it was right to stay the course now, and why leaving quickly would be the worst foreign policy mistake our country could possibly make in terms of the ramifications to our long-term security. I disagree with you on all three points, but I'll give you a start. Do you want to start with A, B, or C? Your choice.
I guess I'll start with A. I think it's relevant in the news. I think the argument for going to war in the first place had always been centered around WMDs, I think largely because of a couple things, but to some extent, circumstantially, because that was what resonated with people. So, once you gave an argument that people got behind, trying to follow it up with some, say, thicker meaning, wasn't that successful. And actually, we did find WMDs in Iraq, not as many as we might have thought a nation like Iraq could have.
What did we find? An old vial that was underground for 10 years? What are you talking about?
Actually, we found 1.77 metric tons of enriched uranium. We found...
Wait, 1.77 tons of enriched uranium. Now, you're not talking about the stuff that was already under UN lock and key, are you?
I'd have to check. I'm kind of citing a Wall Street Journal article, which cited what the WMDs that we have found that was under Saddam Hussein's control that he could have provided to terrorists had he been, you know, inclined to do so.
Well, Ed, with due respect, I mean, this is breaking news. I mean, if we have 1.77 tons of enriched uranium that could actually be used for a nuclear weapon, you know, I would think that's headlines, but I'll tell you this. It may be in the break, or you can give my producer the website where and I'll look at that article myself. I certainly haven't seen that. Go ahead, though. What else?
Okay. 1,500 gallons of chemical weapon agents, chemical warheads containing cyclosarin, and over 1,000 radioactive materials in powdered form meant for dispersal over populated areas.
I see. And where were these found?
These were found in Iraq.
These were found in Iraq. Why isn't this headlines in the news?
You got me. You know, I really think the press was out to basically had an agenda to prove that unless it was, you know, enough that equated a world power like China or Russia, they were gonna say that the arguments made by the Bush administration were overstated.
Ed, listen, we have to go to a break, Ed. Well, hold on. We have to go to a break, and I'll read whatever you provide to me, but let me just suggest that when the U.S. inspectors come back and say they didn't find anything, when the U.N. inspectors come back and say they didn't find anything, I suspect they didn't find anything other than, you know, the stuff like the explosives that were under lock and key that unfortunately our troops, in a manner of oversight, let go. But I'll read whatever you have, and folks, if you want to call in, you can debate with Ed or me at 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back after this.
There are a lot of people out there making claims of miracle cures for this or that, but they're usually anonymous. Margie Garrison, who they call the Arthritis Lady, gives you her name and tells you her story. In July 1979, Margie was amazed when her doctor uttered the words, "Arthritis is the easiest disease there is to cure." What a difference from what she'd heard for 43 years, that there was no cure for arthritis. We don't have time here, but to learn the secret Margie learned, get to a computer and log on to healthstarproducts.com. It's guaranteed or your money back, and you have a full year to decide. Look it up for yourself online at healthstarproducts.com. HealthStar, H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com.
For many kids, high school graduation is still a dream, not a reality. For them, a brighter future might be within view, but not within reach. Fortunately, there are Boys and Girls Clubs all over the country helping these kids find their way. When they join the club, they're entering a positive place, a place where they could take advantage of numerous educational programs and eventually even receive college scholarships. Most of the kids who go to the Boys and Girls Clubs will go on to college. Often they're the first ones in their family to do that. But for every child we help, there are thousands more who still need to be given that opportunity. I'm Denzel Washington, and I'm asking you to help these kids create a positive future instead of just dreaming about it. Call 1-800-854-CLUB and support a program that works. The Boys and Girls Clubs, the positive place for kids.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm debating Ed Ronka, a listener formerly of New Jersey, currently of Buffalo, New York. Before the break, Ed Ronka mentioned that we did find 1.77 metric tons of enriched uranium. I have to say Google is an amazing and wondrous thing. In 2 minutes, I have looked up 1.77 tons of enriched uranium, and I can report exactly what it is. This is uranium that had been under the seal of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, since 1991. Now, we all know that Saddam Hussein had this kind of uranium prior to the first Gulf War, and we also know that under Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton, the United Nations was able to come in, the international agencies, and to check it and to seal it. And, in fact, it had been under seal and had been undisturbed since 1991. In fact, the UN had been guarding it. Also, it's low-enriched uranium, which is not the kind of uranium that you can use, by the way, for a dirty bomb or for nuclear materials. So I want to clarify that, and that's based on the IAEA site itself, which you can go to at IAEA.org. But, Ed, go ahead. You were telling us why we should go to war in Iraq.
Sure. Yeah, and I actually didn't mean to get on the tangent of weapons of mass destruction. I think it's a relevant argument, but in light of the current debate, I'll even concede that.
Okay.
Although Joe Lieberman, a Senate Democrat who voted for the war, who supports the war, has said that he has made the case that basically we have evidence that Saddam was planning to, once he could break out of U.N. sanctions, he was going to go back into rapid redevelopment of chemical and biological.
Ed, let me just say to you, I don't necessarily dispute that. I don't dispute that Saddam Hussein, like today Iran or North Korea or, frankly, a number of Arab and African countries, would, if not constrained, develop nasty weapons. But to me, what's interesting and what the UN inspectors found, and in fact what the Dofer Commission found, the report by the United States Commission, was that precisely because of sanctions, Saddam Hussein could not, and flyovers and the other things that we've been doing since the 90s, that Saddam Hussein could not develop weapons of mass destruction even if he wanted to. I mean, would you concede that that was basically the case, that as long as we kept up, and I don't know if any Democrats were arguing to end, maybe there were some, but I certainly wasn't one arguing to end the sanctions or end the flyovers. Don't you think we had him pretty much contained?
I think the world community was going to end the sanctions. It was time to either go to war or end sanctions. I think the world support for sanctions was going to end. And I think the evidence of this is the oil for food scandal, which was basically European nations were bypassing the boycotts.
And by the way, it wasn't just European nations. I did a show on the oil for food scandal. There were a number of U.S. companies that bypassed, as well as, no question, European nations. Russia, in fact, did a lot of bypassing. You know, when there's a lot of money to be made, people try to get around the sanctions. But what's interesting is the sanctions, even though they failed to stop the sale of oil from an oil-rich country, did manage to stop Iraq from doing its weapons of mass destruction. And I guess my question is, I don't know that you go to war to convince the world to keep up sanctions. It seems to me there's a middle path. Don't end the sanctions. Don't go to war. Just keep allowing the inspections, which, by the way, and I supported this when he did it, George Bush originally did in 2002. He insisted on continuing inspections. Saddam Hussein let them in. Why couldn't we have continued that into the near future and instead focused on al-Qaeda?
I think the one thing that you kind of whitewash is the effort it takes for the United States to contain Saddam, to remain troops in the area, had made us vulnerable to al-Qaeda. We had been attacked. Our troops had been attacked in the effort to contain Saddam Hussein. Our troops have been attacked by al-Qaeda.
You're talking about the attack in Saudi Arabia where our bunkers were blown up? Is that what you're talking
exactly
about?
Exactly. Okay, the
well,
towers, yes.
Don't you think that our troops are in more danger now and subject to more attacks now than we were then?
End in sight. Now there's an end in sight.
Is there? When is the end? I know we're jumping around here, but when do you realistically see the end in sight? 1 year, five years?
1 year from now, things will be so much better. And I think by the next presidential election, the war in Iraq will be a minor issue. It will be more about where people stood on the issue back when it was important rather than, I think by the next presidential election, this will all have been waned. We will still have troops there, just like we've had troops in Germany and Japan for, ages after the war was over. I think that will be the case, but I think the end is clearly in sight. I think right now it's down to 10,000. Our enemy is down into the 10,000s, and we have troops there right now of 160,000 who are slowly removing their duty to protect Iraqi civilians, and we're basically there as a backup force and as a attack force to exterminate the enemy.
Ed, I wish what you were saying is true. I have to say, I do think you're looking at this through rose-colored glasses. We've had generals go and testify before Congress that this thing is going to take many, many years to come. But we're going to come back. I'm going to give you a full chance to respond. We've got some callers on the line, too. Folks, if you want to call in and agree or disagree with anything Ed or I am saying, feel free to do so. Toll-free number 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. We'll be right back after this.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
What do you think of when you see a Shriner? Their unique red hats, their colorful parades? What about helping kids? Shriners Hospitals offers some of the world's best orthopedic spinal cord and burn medical care to children totally free of charge. And they combine that care with innovative teaching and progressive research programs. If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
What some people are saying about your morning with Jim Harrington and friends.
Hello, this is Dr. Evil. I'm listening to Your Morning with Jim Harrington and Friends on my very evil radio. Okay, just somebody give me a freaking break here. I don't understand the jokes.
Well, Austin gets them. Your Morning with Jim Harrington and Friends, Monday through Friday, right here.
6 to 10 Eastern Time on the Talkstar Radio Network. From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today is Debate Tuesday. I am debating Ed Ronka of Buffalo, New York, a longtime listener of the Inside Scoop. Ed, we already have a couple callers on the line, but I want to make sure you get a full chance to make your argument before we proceed to rebut it, I guess. So give me your best 1 or 2 minutes, if you can, on what our goals are in Iraq, why we're there, and what you think we'll accomplish.
Okay, I mean, I think the underlying thing is, as Condoleezza Rice states so eloquently, is the reason the Middle East has been a haven for terrorists like bin Laden to be able to do ruthless attacks is the cycle of violence that comes out of these Islamo-fascist states, that where the people are basically repressed and brutally murdered, massacred, genocide. Anyone who's listening to the Saddam Hussein trial and actually listening to what the witnesses are testifying to, I mean, I would point out to anyone who's studied the Holocaust of World War II, do the words "never again" mean anything? And if they don't, if they're not backed up by some action, then what can we do? the bottom line is we are just about to turn the corner. Like I said, our enemy is numbered in the 10,000s, and some of our enemies are the actual organization that attacked us on 9/11, Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is in Iraq, and our troops are engaged. If that's not a fight worth fighting, then I don't know what is.
Well, there are a lot of different points you make there. I want to respond to each and every one of them, and I also want to get to my callers. Let's just say for Al-Qaeda being in Iraq that they weren't significantly there until we invaded, so I don't think we're doing any good in that regard. And as far as we're about to turn the corner, you know, the president said the mission was accomplished in 2003. It's possible we're about to turn the corner, but as far as I see it, we're actually getting further and further behind. And, of course, you can be saying that for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. I don't think it's anything like the Holocaust, and indeed, I do think there is an area where genocide is occurring in the world. It's in Sudan, in the Darfur region, and I think, frankly, that that's a place where U.S. resources should go. I do agree with you there's a cycle of violence. I do agree with you that people are repressed. I do agree with you that the Middle East needs some democracy. But my view is the best way to impose democracy is not to impose it at all, certainly not by military troops. It's to encourage people to take democracy in their own hands so that they can really feel it's their country. I do have a couple of listeners on the line. I want to hear what they have to say. Let's go to Dave from Northern California. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark and Ed. Ed, I'm David G. on the blog, and we've been exchanging some thoughts. And I will be saying that I do think you are a sincere person in your statements and in your convictions. I would not say that of many people that Mark debates with. I think most of them just study talking points and how do I spin this, twist it, and reframe it.
And I agree with you, Dave, that Ed is sincere. No question in my mind about that. Go ahead.
Now, I would pose to you, though, to weigh a couple of things. I mean, there have been so many, but just I'll give you a couple. You are aware, I believe, that a dozen years ago, a group of cons sat down and called themselves PNAC and planned these invasions back then and tried to market them to Clinton. Clinton wouldn't go along with it. They tried everything they could to get rid of them. You are aware of that.
Ed, do you know about the Project for a New American Century that planned a war in Iraq back in the 90s?
I'm not aware of them specifically. I certainly know, you know, the general idea of the neocon movement and their ideas.
Well, let me give you one specific thing that you should check out if you haven't already, because I think it's proof, not just of the meetings of Richard Perl and Paul Wolfowitz, who are in the government today, but the government itself, January 30th, 2001, in the book The Price of Loyalty by Ron Susskind, they have the Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill actually shows a map of Iraq that they divided into 10 separate oil fields. This is 10 days after Bush came in power. Clearly, the idea, and I don't think, by the way, this contradicts what you've been saying, Ed, about promoting democracy, but clearly the idea of invading Iraq long predated September 11th. I mean, you don't dispute that, do you, Ed?
I don't dispute that any good government, and this has to do with the divide between really what I think, what I would criticize, say, a Clinton approach to foreign policy versus a Bush approach to foreign policy. I don't dispute that a good administration that plans a proactive foreign policy will plan things out in nitty-gritty detail, such as a contingency for an invasion in Iraq, that a contingency for spreading democracy, you know, through a process like we're underway. But the motivation is not for oil, you know, to make one rich. It's the long-term view that the only way the United States can truly be safe in the world is if, you know, these Islamo-fascists that are nothing more than a stack of cards, if they're not replaced with democracy. That's the long-term vision.
Well,
that's the neocon vision.
And by the way, I think actually that is the vision of somebody like Wolfowitz. I don't think it's the vision of somebody like Cheney, who we know had Iraq divided into 10 separate oil fields. Why would he do that if he didn't care about the oil? But let me go back to Dave. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, the next one I would say is the Downing Street memo, and I think you are familiar with that, where Bush and Tony Blair conspired to justify invading Iraq, plotting it out in advance. I believe that we will fix the evidence to give us that. You're familiar with that. And how do you deal with it?
Ed?
The Downing Street memo, you know, or the whole Joe Wilson debacle. The bottom line is the Bush administration thought it was right to go to war, as I thought it was right to go to war, and they used a PR operation in order to sell the war. I think that's the way FDR did it to sell World War II.
But is it okay if they did what the Downing Street memo says they did, and this is a quote, fix the facts around the intelligence, unquote. Is that okay, Ed?
Fix the facts with in the British connotation, which is like making a prosecutorial case.
I don't see it like that, Ed, but I appreciate your argument. Dave, thank you very much for your call. One thing, though, my understanding of the Downing Street memo is it's the Bush administration that was fixing the facts around the intelligence. I'm not sure Blair was implicated with that. I think he rejected that view, but if I'm wrong, send me an email and let me know. Okay, Dave? If you want to call in, 877-528-TALK. The debate will continue right after this.
This is Newsbreak. A Florida jury this afternoon found former university professor Sami Alarian not guilty of charges that he and three others raised money for the Palestinian terrorist group Islamic Jihad. At Saddam Hussein's trial in Baghdad, the former dictator repeatedly complained the prosecution is unfair and threatened to boycott the trial. President Bush told reporters today the U.S. won't pay any ransom for the release of Americans kidnapped in Iraq. He did say we will use our intelligence gathering to see if the hostages can be located. The president also said the U.S. will bring the captors to justice. There was a shooting this afternoon inside a Detroit high school. According to witnesses, a man with a gun chased a victim to the Central High's vestibule and shot him. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 22 points at 10,856. NASDAQ increased 3 to 2260, while the S&P 500 index was up 2 points to 1263. There's more news at usaradio.com.
This is a MultiView special report. As families hit the road this holiday season, the Consumer Electronics Association has some suggestions on how to make your trip safer. The addition of rear seat video entertainment and dashboard GPS navigation systems may be the perfect way to eliminate common driver distractions, such as calming unruly children and reading roadmaps. In recognition of consumer needs and safety, the association's mobile division proposes three basic guidelines when putting these great technology tools to work. Megan Pollack, spokeswoman for CEA, explains more about the Watch the Road campaign.
Consumers are realizing the multiple benefits of in-car entertainment and navigation systems. When used properly, these products help drivers stay focused on the road. Drivers need to remember the CAR acronym. Consult your owner's manual for proper use. Assure systems are installed by mobile electronic certified professionals. Remember to drive safely and let your passengers be entertained.
For more, visit digitaldriver.org. I'm
Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
The safety of SSRI-type antidepressants during pregnancy has been a controversial topic for years. A few studies suggest that these medications are not associated with birth defects or other complications, but a new report from a panel of experts appointed by the National Toxicology Program suggests that Prozac may have some subtle side effects in newborns. When exposed to the drug late in pregnancy, babies seem more likely to be born sleepier and have reduced birth weight. They may also have a higher risk of respiratory difficulties. Depression during pregnancy is a serious problem that requires careful management. With these new concerns about Prozac and similar drugs, doctors will have to be careful to balance the benefits against possible harm to the fetus.
This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Debate Tuesday on the Inside Scoop. I'm debating a longtime listener, Ed Ronka of Buffalo, New York, formerly of New Jersey, and he's defending the Bush administration in Iraq. And I'll tell you, Ed, I think you're doing a heck of a job, but as far as I'm concerned, your arguments, the arguments you're making, the arguments the administration has made, seem to me to really put everything in a... in isolation, if you will. They're not looking at the fact that we only have a limited amount of force, a limited amount of money, a limited amount of things we can do in the world. It seems to me if you're trying to save lives, do good, stop genocide, you'd start in Sudan or you'd start in Liberia. If you're trying to stop weapons of mass destruction, you go after Iran or North Korea. If you're trying to go after Al-Qaeda, You'd go into Afghanistan and Pakistan. And if you want to promote democracy in the Arab world and stop people really rallying up this Islamic fascism, you got to start in Egypt and Saudi Arabia, the countries, by the way, where the people from those countries attacked us. And they're filling American mosques as we speak with inflammatory material, trying to get American Muslims to rise up as terrorists. I think our allies in Saudi Arabia and in Egypt, if we were to get democracy among them, that would truly spread democracy throughout the Middle East. After all, these are the two primary Islamic nations. So why Iraq with all these other things we could do?
Well, we were engaged with war in Iraq. I agree, Egypt, it would be a godsend if we could get democracy in Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Saudi Arabia and Egypt happen to be the two governments, as well as Pakistan, that are cooperating with the United States in the war on terror. And to some extent, their governments are most vulnerable to false extremism of bin Laden. And then where would you be? I'm sure you're not suggesting that we go to war with Saudi Arabia or go to war.
No, I'm not. I think we could do a lot of things without war. Absolutely. In fact, I think just about everything I mentioned could be done without war, with the possible exception of Afghanistan and where I really think that the war was necessary. But in just about every other case, I think we can do these things without war. And it seems to me that when we have allies that are repressive, like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, which, by the way, have as much torture and mistreatment and anti-democracy as Saddam Hussein ever did, just because they're our allies, it seems to me that if we're allied with these nasty people, just like the Iraqi government now is torturing people, the same prison Saddam is, what makes that any different from Saddam? If you've got an Arab person, you know, they're just going to say, well, we're just as bad as the other people.
I don't believe that the statement you made is true, that they're as bad as Saddam. I mean, they're not, they're hardly ideal, but they're not as bad as Saddam. To bring about change in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, there's no doubt we're doing everything. I'm sure the Clinton administration did everything they could to act on an end game plan of getting Egypt to be as reformed as possible, Saudi Arabia as possible.
Honestly, I don't think either administration, Clinton or the current Bush administration, has been tough enough against Egypt or Saudi Arabia.
What's the carrot on the end of the stick for them?
Well, in Egypt, I'll tell you what I would do. In Egypt, we give billions of dollars of aid. This dates back to the Camp David Accords. I'm glad Egypt signed a peace agreement with Israel, but you know what? They've worn out their welcome. And if they continue to have anti-democracy, I would cut aid to Egypt, absolutely.
And you pull that aid, and you will see a greater threat of that country falling to the Islamic extremism that they're barely holding on to avoid to begin with.
See, I don't think they have us over a barrel like that. I don't believe it. I don't believe that we can't persuade the Mubarak government to have more democratic reforms, which they're already starting to have, and they're way too little, way too late. But without the threat of withdrawing aid, I think the threat of withdrawing aid would get Egypt to act.
I think, short of Mubarak, the rest of the nation is anti-U.S.
They're anti-U.S. for a reason. They're anti-U.S. because we support Mubarak. See, to me, there's a whole chicken and egg problem here, Ed, that we support vicious dictators. Remember, we supported Saddam Hussein. Don't forget that, under Reagan and Bush.
I won't.
And we supported the Shah of Iran. We support the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The people hate these vicious, repressive dictatorships. They revolt against them, and then they hate the United States. And the argument that we have to support more of them, to me, doesn't make sense.
No doubt, you're right. But how do you get from here to there? It's a chicken and egg problem. If Mubarak were to drop dead tomorrow, I would give the country hardly a chance to keep out of the hands of the Muslim extremists.
Well, surely it seems to me the answer is not to force American ways at the end of a sword or a gun. It seems to me the better way to do it is to push them to promote democracy. For example, we successfully changed a dictator to a Democrat in the Philippines, when we'd supported Marcos, to Aquino. It can be done, but I think it has to be done without U.S. troops and with the support of Democrats on the ground. There are Egyptians that want democracy. There are Saudi Arabians that want democracy. There are Iraqis that want democracy. And I think if we help them achieve it, the best example I would give is the Persian Gulf War. After that war, which I supported, by the way, you had the Kurds and the Shiites rise up. And the Bush first Bush Senior administration, instead of helping them take their country themselves from Saddam, we refused to help them. I think if you help a country, as we did, by the way, in Afghanistan, people think we fought in Afghanistan. I'm sorry, we didn't do most of the fighting, and that was okay with me. The Northern Alliance did most of the fighting in Afghanistan. We supported native Afghanis taking back their own country. That I support. I just don't think U.S. troops have to do it.
I agree with you. I agree with almost everything you say. But there's no going back in history. And to tell you the truth, if you think that there's an anti-war movement in Iraq now, if George Bush had gone to Iraq right after that, we pushed Iraq out of Kuwait, I guarantee you, we wouldn't see nothing like what we see now. The anti-war movement would have caved in, and as soon as the casualty rates got high, I mean, we were able to conduct such a sanitary war in the first Gulf War.
Well, I think the reason is because we wouldn't be in the front lines. We'd be helping the Iraqi people free themselves, which I see as a very different thing. Gordon from Michigan's been hanging on the line an awfully long time. Gordon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. I keep hearing this phrase, stay the course, stay the course. And I really don't know what that means. As an old infantry point man, I realize to stay the course, you need to have an azimuth. And in order to have an azimuth, you need to have a military mission. And I really don't understand what that military mission is in Iraq anymore.
Well, let's ask Ed. What is the military mission in Iraq today?
At this point, it's to pull back and support the Iraqi army to basically defend itself from terrorist attacks, to defend itself from insurgent attacks. And when the enemy is identified, then we attack.
You mean like we did in Vietnam, how we helped the South Vietnamese support them?
Not at all. Now let's just talk about Vietnam, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
Vietnam. Okay, to make some comparisons to Vietnam, our casualty rate at this point is one-tenth of what it had been at the Vietnam War. We've only been involved in this war for 3 years, whereas the Vietnam War lasted 8 years. At the end of 8 years in Vietnam, we had absolutely nothing to show for it other than our own POWs that were stuck there. Here, we've already taken over the country. We've already established several layers of democratic institutions. The democratic process will take place next week. And that's it. There's 10,000 insurgents. In Vietnam, there were 600,000.
And I think the government is sorely underestimating the insurgents. But if you're right, why can't we just declare victory and get out? We have to take a break. I know Gordon's got more to say. If you want to call in, folks, it's 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. If we've achieved our goals, let's declare victory. Saddam Hussein is gone, and bring the troops home. We'll be right back after this.
All right, men, you know who's going to be out in front tonight. Our boss, the President of the United States.
Golden Age of Movies presents the Ronald Reagan Classic Film Collection with three great feature-length films. Ronald Reagan was beloved because he embodied the ideals that made America great. It's fascinating to see Reagan as a dashing young actor, knowing the man on the screen will go on to become president and one of the greatest world leaders. This classic collection is nearly 6 hours long and includes Reagan in Tennessee's Partner with co-star John Payne, Santa Fe Trail with Errol Flynn, Olivia de Havilland and Raymond Massey, and This Is the Army with George Murphy and Kate Smith. If you order now, we'll include hilarious classic 50s TV with Ronald Reagan appearing with Milton Berle, Steve Allen, Gary Moore, and James Dean. All three movies and the classic television. A $30 value for only $19.95. Call now or order online at ReaganMovies.com.
Tired of losing in the casinos and being in the hole? Learn how to win at Blackjack with Blackjack for Winners. Call 1-800-214-7012, 1-800-214-7012. This is the DVD the casinos do not want you to see. According to Tommy Hyland, a legendary blackjack professional, this DVD teaches an easy way to count cards and beat the casinos at their own game of blackjack. It takes only three easy steps. One, basic strategy. Two, card counting. And three, money management. It's just that easy to beat the casinos at their their own game of blackjack. Order right now and you'll receive two instructional DVDs, 52 flashcards making basic strategy a snap, and a reference card you can take into the casinos with you. All of this for only $29.95 plus shipping and handling. Order today at 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. Start learning to win at Blackjack today with Blackjack for Winners. 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Debate Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop. My guest is a longtime listener, Ed Ronka of Buffalo, New York, who requested to have this Debate Tuesday and has bravely been arguing his point of view against myself and several listeners. Ed, before the break, I said, okay, whatever happened to get us into this war, Saddam Hussein is gone. You talked about Iraqi democratic institutions. I happen to not like the fact that they still torture people, but okay, they're set up. We're going to have yet another election in Iraq. Why can't we draw down troops, say we've won, declare victory, mission accomplished, draw down our troops, and be out by the next November 2006 elections?
I think everything you say is true, except November 2006 is just a little too fast. There's a safe way to do I don't know if I was on there from when I first started talking. I agree with everything you said.
Yeah, no, we heard what you said. Everything you said.
Okay.
Let me go back to Gordon. Well, go ahead. You have another point before I bring Gordon back?
Yeah, I was just going to say that we just need longer time to safely hand over the power to the Iraqi authorities, and I think we're likely to be, because of our military superiority, we're likely to be a backup force. We're likely to provide air support for the Iraqis.
See, I think we're swimming backwards, Ed. I think that if you look at the insurgency, it's growing because the Iraqi people really weren't part of it 2 years ago. They were generally glad Saddam Hussein is gone. But now if you look at the insurgency, more than 90% is native Iraqis, and they just don't want us there. And I think the longer we're there, the greater the insurgency, whereas I think if we leave, there's a much greater chance of the insurgency dying.
I'll let you get Gordon in, but I would like to point out there are several polls about Iraqis who are far more optimistic than you are stating right now.
Well, no, I didn't say I'm not optimistic. I think if we leave, we have a fighting chance. I don't know that we'll succeed, but we have a fighting chance. I think if we stay, we don't have a chance. But I do want to get back to Gordon. Gordon, go ahead.
Yeah, like you said, Mark, there are two aspects to our enemy in Iraq. We have the insurgency and we have the terrorists, and it's pretty much a 90% Iraqi insurgency and a 10% terrorist factor from Al-Qaeda.
Right, it's actually more than 90%.
Basically, I have a perfect solution for victory. We will destroy the insurgency by simply removing U.S. troops, because the U.S. troops are the only enemy of the insurgency, and the insurgency, when that dries up, they will dry up Al-Qaeda's forces at that point. So I think we have victory there. I think we can declare victory by removing our troops.
How about that, Ed? I mean, don't you think that the only reason Al-Qaeda thrives is because so many Iraqi people want U.S. to leave, and when we leave, the Iraqi people will mostly be satisfied, and the few Al-Qaeda that got in there won't have anyone to support them.
I think you're on the right track, and I think that's mostly right. I just think if you were to, for instance, say that we will be out of there by next November, that basically aids the terrorists.
How so?
In a mission to just cause terror. They'll know that our time is up, and they will be able to strategically plan around that to wreak the most havoc.
Ed, I think it's exactly the opposite, and I'll tell you why. I think that if we say we're going to leave and be out by November, that the Iraqi people, who thus far have not been big fans of the United States there, will overwhelmingly change from being against us to saying, thank you got rid of Saddam Hussein, we don't like all you did, we don't like the tortures and the prisons and all, but you're leaving, we respect that. They will no longer support the insurgency, and the little bit of fuel that Al-Qaeda has to do bad things in Iraq will dry up. What about that, Ed?
I think you're very much on the right track. The only two things I would say would be, A, let's make sure the Iraqis are trained well enough to cover any of those say, worst-case contingencies. And two, let's just basically, I'd rather have a military general decide what's the proper, you know, mode of pulling out and for the exact reasons you say, rather than you or me decide.
Yeah, but see, the military generals aren't making the decisions. I'm sure you know this, Ed. When we went into war in the first place, you had General Shinseki, Eric Shinseki, say we need this overwhelming troops. Bush didn't agree, didn't believe him, didn't follow what he said, fired the head of the army because of it, and he hasn't listened to his generals. And so generals now know that if they disagree with the Bush administration, they're going to be fired. So he's not listening to his generals on the ground.
Not true. That's definitely not true. In fact, I believe it was the general that fought the first Gulf War that backed Bush last time for president.
No, but the point is that he hasn't been following them with regard to troop levels. It seems to me the problem has been that this is not a military solution. That once we understand, in fact, that this is a occupying solution, not a conquering territory solution, our military is not made to occupy foreign countries. They're made to win wars. And I think we're doing a lousy job at it. We're not prepared at it. And I think Gordon's right. If we were to leave, we would actually accomplish a lot more. And I don't see you really saying too much different here, but I want to give Gordon the last word. Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, there's another factor we haven't considered. Whether if there is no mission, maybe there is perhaps a covert mission that even the military isn't aware of. And that might be what's really fueling the keeping of these U.S. forces in Iraq. Perhaps the U.S. forces are being kept in on a covert mission with people in power still thinking we can get low-cost Iraqi oil and make it cost-effective. Whereas I would say perhaps it's already been shown it's not a possibility that this oil is cost-effective.
Oh, I don't know. I think, Gordon, we may be able, by stealing the oil from the Iraqi people and using it for ourselves, we may be able to make a bargain in terms of oil. I think it'll be less expensive than the cost to occupy a country and deal with troops dying and so forth. But isn't it just conceivable to you, Ed, that the fact that we're in Iraq and we're not in Afghanistan, we're not in Pakistan, we have not made any real strong effort to get Osama bin Laden or Mullah Omar. We've made some effort, but we haven't made any kind of the effort we've done in Iraq. Doesn't it suggest to you that this really isn't about Al-Qaeda? It really isn't about democracy. It really might all be about cheap oil for oil companies. You don't buy that.
If you were to have proof of that, I'd be the first one to call for an impeachment hearing. The fact is, I don't believe that Joe Lieberman, John McCain, you know, it's not just George Bush that's waging this war. There's plenty of high-profile supporters who aren't just supporters. They're the true believers. You know, anyone who read Joe Lieberman's piece in Wall Street Journal last week knows. I mean,
right, and I respectfully disagree with Joe Lieberman, and I think that Joe Lieberman is there to try to promote democracy in the Middle East, and I think he's dead wrong that you can promote it at the point of a gun, but I do think he's a sincere man. I'll tell you this, though, in terms of proof for your impeachment hearings, Ed, check out my show I did a couple weeks back about, I think it was called Was It All for Oil, where I had a guest detail all the oil contracts that are being made right now. Ahmed Chalabi's got his finger in the pie, and the oil companies are raking in billions from the war in Iraq. See if that changes your mind. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I couldn't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
I've been reading online about a drug-free home treatment program that suggests you can be asthma-free. It's a program designed by an ex-asthmatic who claims she cured her own asthma. It's based on a little-known but astounding clinical trial at a major hospital. What would you give to be free of asthma, asthma symptoms, and sinus and allergy symptoms, to breathe easily, freely, naturally, in a relaxed way? This drug-free method, proven by clinical trials, is guaranteed or you get your money back, and you have 90 days to decide. Get to a computer now and go to HealthStarProducts.com. That's www.HealthStarProducts.com. Read about the asthma program, and if it doesn't do what it says it'll do for you, you get your money back, and you've got 90 days to decide. Go to HealthStarProducts.com.
Well, AISI, it was NBD.
You don't know what your kids are saying online, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're here in the last segment already, just a few minutes left. And before we get to the closing arguments of my guest, longtime listener Ed Ronka, Ed, I just wanted to ask you, are you surprised it goes so quickly?
I was worried that I wouldn't have enough to say or that it would drag on, but no, it was. It pretty much.
Is it harder than you imagined to do this?
No, it was more easier. I was afraid that I would stutter and lose my trains of thought, but I think I kind of kept it on a reactive. I think you kept feeding me the questions, and it was more of a reaction.
Okay, really. Fair enough. Let me get you your closing argument. Make your strongest point. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, let me just make a quick mention. Wesley Clark, hardly a fan of the Bush administration, made a great editorial on staying the course in Iraq in the New York Times today. Definitely critical of the Bush administration, but at the same time saying there's no way we can cut and run. But just to go on, I think we're on the verge of winning this thing, and it just astounds me that at the moment we're on the verge of winning this thing, there are so many crazy calls to say we're going to lose it. A part of the problem I have when I talk to people about this is this deep-seated cynicism that everything George Bush does is to steal money, to get money from oil fields. Everything George Bush and Dick Cheney do is motivated by getting oil for money. Now, I can think of several businesses I would get into if I was a greedy person, and that for the amount of effort it takes, the amount of money I can get. Politics is a very painful task, and I hardly believe that George Bush spent his whole career getting to the position he got so he could get the windfall that you're saying he's getting, or Dick Cheney, for that matter. I believe Dick Cheney has been in Congress, and I have actually followed his career, and, if you go by the facts of what he says, I can't find anything that was ever wrong with anything he said. Now, you can create this story of cynicism. I've seen it done to the Clinton administration, and I see it done now, where sure, there was a no-bid contract in Iraq for building it up with Dick Cheney's old company. I can't place the name of it.
Halliburton. Let me just ask you to wrap up, because I want to respond before
sure.
we end.
Sure. Half the reasons there's these no-bid contracts is because how many companies are in the business of rebuilding countries? I think you can lose yourself in this cynicism, and I would recommend people keep an open mind and read Joe Lieberman's editorial and consider that the George Bush's reason for going to war is stated by that.
Okay, Ed, let me respond. I think the problem with the around-the-corner argument, it's just around the corner, is it's the same kinds of arguments we made in Vietnam. Now, I will grant you this. If General Wesley Clark were running the war in Iraq, I admit, I would give him more time because this is a man who knows how to conduct a war. He was Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. He conducted the war in Kosovo, didn't lose a single American troop. And I will agree with you, he's got some great ideas, and not just military ideas, but political ideas as well. Ways, for example, to stop the torture so that people hate the government and hate us left. And I would agree with you. The problem is that we do not have a man who knows how to prosecute a war. George Bush has shown that every single time he could do something right, he did it wrong, whether with regard to body armor or number of troops or anything else. I didn't support this war, and General Clark, by the way, didn't support this war either. But I do, I admit, I trust his suggestions far more than the president's. And to end with whether they're achieving, you know, making money off this thing, I have to tell you this. George Bush, is he trying to make money? I think George Bush does what his handlers tell him to do. He does what his Cheney tells him to do, does what his father tells him to do. Otherwise, he'd just be a drunk. I mean, this is the guy who never succeeded in business anyway. But Cheney is helping himself, and not just himself, but his friends. You know, it's one thing to run an oil company.